From Ground Zero Radio, this is Democracy Now!
If Tom gets this procedure, he has a chance of being cured of his disease. If Tom does not get this procedure, his disease will progress and he'll more likely than not will die of progressive multiple myeloma.
Cigna Insurance, one of the country's largest private insurers, has refused to pay for a procedure that could save a man's life. Today we'll talk with that man, Thomas Kincannon. From one death row to another, today is also the birthday of this country's most famous prisoner on death row.
From death row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now! Resistance Radio. I'm Amy Goodman. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan has refused Israel's demand to delay and change a UN team that will investigate Israel's assault on the Jenin refugee camp, which left thousands homeless and an unknown number dead. The UN Security Council held emergency consultations Tuesday night after Israel suddenly announced it is delaying the fact-finding mission. Israel says it wants more military experts on the team and assurances it will confine its activities to Jenin. A Western diplomat said Israel also wants the former president of the International Committee of the Red Cross removed from the team. The UN Secretary General has agreed to postpone the arrival of the fact-finding team in the Middle East. This is to give time to the Israeli government representatives to brief the team. Israeli Foreign Minister Shimon Peres gave a green light to the fact-finding mission on Friday, saying the country has nothing to hide. An Israeli soldier shot and seriously wounded a Palestinian standing at a window inside the Church of the Nativity compound in Bethlehem today. The shooting came as Israelis and Palestinians planned a second day of negotiations. Israeli army negotiators are calling for the surrender and possible exile of between 35 and 40 Palestinian alleged militants. The Palestinian negotiators are calling for the removal of the wanted men to the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, the Franciscan Order has filed a petition to Israel's Supreme Court calling for an order requiring the Israeli authorities to meet the humanitarian needs of those inside the basilica. Father David Jaeger says he wants water and electricity supplies to be restored and for the army to stop obstructing the delivery of food. The order also is requesting permission to remove and bury two people who were shot dead by the Israeli armed forces 2 days ago. Pope John Paul II Tuesday told a gathering of U.S. cardinals that sex abuse by priests is not only a sin but a crime and is, quote, appalling in the eyes of God. He said there's no place for child molesters in the priesthood and declared his confidence that the church's sex abuse scandal would end with, quote, a purification of the entire Catholic community. It was his most forceful condemnation of priestly child abuse since the scandal erupted in January, but the Pope still did not offer a direct apology to victims. Nor did the speech provide concrete guidance, and some U.S. cardinals turned their attention to gay priests when addressing reporters. The head of the U.S. Episcopal Conference, Wilton Daniel Gregory, said there is an ongoing struggle within the Catholic Church to ensure that the priesthood is not, quote, dominated by homosexual men, and to ensure that the candidates are, quote, healthy in every possible way, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, intellectually. Cardinal Adam Maeda of Detroit went even further and claimed that, quote, behavioral scientists are telling us it's not truly a pedophilia-type problem, but a homosexual-type problem. The U.S. Central Command in Tampa has appointed two senior officers, one Canadian and one American, to investigate the U.S. F-16 warplane precision bombing of Canadian forces last week in Afghanistan, which killed four Canadian soldiers. There's still no word on whether the U.S. military will investigate the U.S. bombing of Afghan civilians. About 3,000 people, mostly Muslims, surrounded a police station in India's western Gujarat state today, demanding officers stop sectarian violence after rampaging Hindus burned much of the neighborhood. On Tuesday night, an armed mob of 5,000 Hindus tore through the neighborhood, blowing up cooking gas canisters to ignite fires in the mostly Muslim area. Some of the mob burst into the office of the local police commissioner and demanded the closing of a relief camp housing 4,500 Muslims who were burned out of their homes earlier. Police fired tear gas at the 3,000 protesters outside the station today, saying they might become violent. A U.S. congressional report has concluded that the Irish Republican Army is, as well as so-called, quote, terror masterminds from Iran, Cuba, and possibly Spain, have created a safe haven in rebel-controlled areas of Colombia. The report follows arrests last summer in Colombia of three alleged IRA members. The full unveiling of the report today, a congressional hearing, is seen as an important public relations event designed to garner support for the Bush administration's attempts to change U.S. policy on Colombia. The administration wants to allow the Colombian military to use U.S. military aid directly against rebels. Sinn Féin President Gerry Adams has refused to attend the hearing. Adams says the hearings are being used to undermine the legal peace process in Colombia. French President Jacques Chirac on Tuesday ruled out a television debate with his extreme right election rival Jean-Marie Le Pen, saying he would have nothing to do with a man who trades in hatred. The anti-immigrant and anti-Semitic Le Pen stunned most of France and alarmed Europe by beating socialist Prime Minister Lionel Jospin into third place in Sunday's first round on the presidential election. Tens of thousands of protesters again took to the streets of France Tuesday in protest of Le Pen's policies. And this news from Nigeria, protesting youths are holding 43 workers hostage on a Chevron Texaco oil drilling rig. Chevron Texaco says the workers have been held since Sunday by youths who are demanding jobs.
Let me know, chief of police, in their cruel ordered sable.
Mia's Blues, Broke Toe Rizzo. And coming up, we're going to talk about the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal. Today is his 48th birthday. I'm Amy Goodman. But first, we go to this story. 2 years ago, Thomas Concannon was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, a rare form of cancer. Multiple myeloma is extremely difficult to cure, but in recent years, bone marrow transplants have proven increasingly effective in treating the disease. If Thomas Concannon gets a bone marrow transplant from his sister, he has a 60% chance of survival. But last week, his insurance company, Cigna, refused to pay for the procedure. Cigna is one of this country's largest private health insurers. The organization is worth more than $91 billion. Last week, as Thomas Concannon lay in the operating room, Cigna told his doctors that they could not perform the bone marrow transplant. They said it was too expensive. We got this story very late. We left messages for the head of Cigna, but were told this morning the company would not comment on today's program. They said they weren't familiar with Thomas Concannon's case and needed more time to prepare a response. We were able last night, however, to reach Dr. Kenneth Miller, who is Thomas Kincannon's doctor. I asked him why he believes Thomas Kincannon needs the operation that Cigna has denied him, and if he could explain what the operation is about.
The procedure is an allogeneic bone marrow transplant, which means a bone marrow transplant from someone else, and it's a member of his family who's a complete match. Mr. Kincannon had received a prior transplant, an auto transplant, using his own, and his disease did not go away. He still has some residual myeloma, and the use of an allogeneic bone marrow transplant represents the best option for a cure.
Why did Cigna deny it?
Well, the type of transplant we're proposing for Mr. Kincannon is what's called a reduced intensity transplant. And these are relatively new types of transplants. They've only been done over the last 4 to 5 years. And they're rapidly increasing in popularity. And in fact, 40% of all allogeneic transplants done in the United States were these reduced intensity transplants. So I think the insurance companies may not know that this is widely accepted in the transplant and oncological community as the standard of care for patients who have received prior extensive therapy. And I think the insurance companies just may not completely understand what transplanters are doing or what oncologists are doing who are treating patients like Mr. Kincannon.
Have you ever been denied, has an insurance company ever denied coverage for this kind of procedure?
No, I have never had an insurance company deny someone for a reduced intensity transplant for a patient with myeloma who has received a prior auto transplant or received prior extensive therapy. No.
How many requests have you made?
Oh, we've done approximately 80 transplants like this, and patients with myeloma have never been denied a coverage.
Have you ever made this request to Cigna?
Not for a patient with multiple myeloma, no. This is the first request we've made to Cigna.
So it's the first time you've been denied for this procedure?
Correct.
If Thomas Kincannon does not get this procedure, what are his chances of survival, and what are they if he does?
Oh, his chances of survival are very small without a transplant. His disease will progress, and the treatment options are very limited for Tom. With a transplant, and even though the risks are high, he has a 50-60% chance of perhaps having a long disease response or perhaps a cure.
And if he doesn't get this procedure?
His disease will progress, and unfortunately will probably die of his disease.
And that is Dr. Kenneth Miller. He is professor of medicine at Tufts University, director of the bone marrow unit at Tufts New England Medical Center, where Thomas Kincannon went last week, was beginning the procedure, the bone marrow transplant, when Cigna got word to his doctors that they would not insure this procedure. Thomas Kincannon, the head of Federal Defenders of the Eastern District of the Legal Aid Society here in New York, and joins us in the studio with his wife, Jan Martvin. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning.
So how did this all happen? How did it come to the point? We hear your doctor, Dr. Miller, saying that this is the first time after doing 80 of these transplants that he has been denied by an insurance company, in this case at Cigna, one of the nation's largest insurers.
Right. Well, we'd been up to the New England Medical Center several weeks ago, and of course a principal question we had was whether or not we'd be able to go through with this, whether or not we'd get coverage, and we'd received assurances from various people at New England Medical Center that they'd dealt with every insurance company for procedures like this, and we were not to worry. And so sometime later, my sister, Regina, who would be the donor, went up, and she had to go through a day or so of testing. And they actually drew blood from her in order to replace it following this later time when her bone marrow would be withdrawn, and I received the same on the same day. So, again, we were assured that there were no complaints from the insurance company. In fact, we were receiving compensation for the consultation and for the testing that was done up in Boston, and that gave us further assurances that we should go ahead. And then on April 9th, they actually put me in the put me in an operating room, and through general anesthesia, put a tube in my chest that was, it's called a catheter, a three-lumen catheter, that's meant to be the vehicle through which they extract for blood tests, and where they put chemo, different forms, chemical cocktails in. And so that was put in, and we thought after a day of rest that I'd get begin two other days of certain kinds of photopheresis, other blood cleansing processes, and other things that would prevent graft versus host disease. And then the following week to get, I expected to get radiation and my sister's transplant. In fact, last Friday, on my Enchantress's birthday here, that was the day.
That's your wife.
Yes, that's my sweetie here. It was to be put in on that day, and that was the day we got the notice we got the letter from Cigna saying we're not, from Dr. Janet Moore saying they were not going to approve that.
Now, we're also joined by Elizabeth Benjamin, who was on a couple of weeks ago talking to us about the movie John Q, the movie where very frustrated and angry father who can't get health insurance for his child who needs a transplant takes over the emergency room of a hospital until he is able to ensure that his son will live. Elizabeth, you were talking then about different ways that people have failing taking over an emergency room to get coverage for life-saving operations. Now, I should say that Elizabeth Benjamin is supervising attorney in the health law unit of the Legal Aid Society. And as I said earlier, Thomas Kincannon, who is the patient here who has multiple myeloma, is the head of the Federal Defenders of the Eastern District of the Legal Aid Society. So you have a lot of legal expertise to join from, to draw from, but that has not stopped Cigna. What is going on here? Why do we have yet another case of a person who could live, yet his insurance company is saying at this point no?
Well, it's clear what's going on here. Unfortunately, Cigna's decided that they've already given Tom one transplant, his own auto transplant, as it were, with his own bone marrow, and that was expensive enough. And so they've decided that they're going to claim that his sister's bone marrow transplant is an experimental procedure, which is, you know, just a lie. As Dr. Miller points out, nearly 40% of all the bone marrow transplants in America right now are these sort of sibling kind of transplants. And that basis, they're saying we're going to deny it. Originally they were just trying to give verbal denials and not put it on paper. Tom's colleagues at the Legal Aid Society contacted me, who's in another division of the Legal Aid Society, and said, you know, what do we do? What do we do? And I said, get a written denial. So they got the written denial on Friday. At 2-3 o'clock, Tom came over. We then notified the insurance department we wanted an expedited appeal. Of this written denial, because you have the right to go outside, the insurance department of the state of New York contracts with independent private companies to review the insurance company's decisions. Now, unfortunately, in this case, the insurance department did its worst job I've ever seen. They basically had the appeal pending for 2 hours on Friday afternoon. They even brought their staff in on Saturday to work on Tom's case. But they then claimed that they needed to give the insurance company, Cigna, a second bite of the apple to have the sort of informal review, which is nowhere in the law on external appeal, by the way. So Cigna got another chance all weekend and then again all Monday morning to think about its decision, even though their own, Cigna's own internal expert has already claimed that Tom's treatment, this proposed treatment, is the most reasonable treatment outcome, that he's an excellent candidate for this treatment. So Cigna knows medically that this is the correct next step for Tom. Cigna's now trying to stall it. They got the insurance company to stall it for another 4 days. Finally, it got out to this independent private company called the Island Peer Review Organization Monday afternoon after we started calling and really putting the heat on the insurance department. The Island Peer Review Organization then again asked Cigna for its opinion. Cigna has up to 24 hours to give its opinion. Cigna took 25 hours to give their opinion. And now we're waiting for the judge, as it were, of the Island Peer Review Organization to make a decision on Tom's case. And we really hope they'll do the right thing.
The Island Peer Review Organization, is this a national organization that is the next step in the review process?
They're regional. I would say a regional organization. They're on contract. If you're challenging a discharge from a hospital, you disagree with the hospital's decision to discharge you, you would go to IPRO and the state contracts with them to make a decision about whether the hospital's right or you're right.
So they're weighing this right now.
They're weighing it right now.
Cigna's denial. And when do they have to make their decision?
They must give a decision by Thursday. Unfortunately, they could not give a decision today because, again, Cigna took its maximum time to provide the information to them. Mm-hmm. So Cigna's playing a really kind of dirty pool, I would say, with Tom's case.
It may sound petty to say we waited Friday and then Saturday and Sunday, but what do these days mean to you, Thomas Concannon?
Well, each day, of course, brings tremendous anxiety because we're trying to figure whether or not we suspend our life in our home here and in our office and my wife's office, and we have kids who are full of anxiety about this. In addition, we start each day by having to flush these things now uselessly dangling in my chest.
What is dangling there?
Well, I have, there are two holes that were put in, apparently. The first one was not adequate to put, to find a vein to get the tube through. And so they stitched that up and then did another one. And from that...
This was for the operation that did not take place.
Well, the operation did take place, but it was for useful purpose after that.
Right, so because they wanted to take your sister's bone marrow and put it into you. But in the process, Cigna denied your coverage, and so you're just left with the tubes.
I've got these tubes and various stitches hanging out, and the tubes need to be cleaned every day with saline solutions and anticoagulants. So we start each day with 9 syringes cleaning these, and the whole package cannot be gotten. It's supposed to be free of moisture itself, other than what goes through these tubes, and so you either have to take a shower with Saran wrap on, and that when you take the peel off the tapes, I take off a layer of skin with that, or you try to bathe standing on your head, so we do my hair in the sink and then sit at the edge of the tub and go through different manage to get clean in other ways. So but mostly my sister and her family is also she works and she has 6 children, and she's kind of hanging on by fingernails, telling her employer what's going on from day to day. She expects to be up there. She'd be in the hospital overnight for drawing approximately a liter of bone marrow for contribution to me.
We have to break for stations to identify themselves, but we're going to come back to Thomas Concannon, who was diagnosed with multiple myeloma 2 years ago, set to go through a increasingly common procedure for people in his situation, which is a bone marrow transfer from his sister. He went up to Boston to New England Medical Center, and you heard they put the tubes in, and then Cigna, one of the nation's largest insurance companies, denied coverage of the operation, which would cost something around $150,000, $200,000. And so he is left with the tubes in his chest, and he came back home. He is the head of Federal Defenders of the Eastern District of the Legal Aid Society in New York City. We're also joined by his wife, and we'll talk to her as well when we come back. We hope that Cigna will join this conversation in a minute.
So
Under the Influence, Follow Me, CeeLo, here on Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I'm Amy Goodman, as we talk about the case of Thomas Concannon. Maybe we can go to a clip of John Q, for those of you who didn't see it, the movie that Denzel Washington starred in, about a man who, because of his health insurance, was unable to get a transplant for his son. And, well, this is what he ultimately did.
Lieutenant Frank Grimes of the Chicago Police Department. Are you the man in charge?
That's right.
Well, who am I speaking to?
John Q.
I assume since all the doors are locked, this is a hostage situation. Is that correct?
Okay. Bless me, Father, for I've sinned. I know you do things your own way.
Blood pressure is dropping fast. He's going into cardiac arrest.
But I don't understand.
Mike's heart is useless. He's going to need a transplant or he's going to die.
What made Mike so sick?
Transplant surgery is very expensive.
We got insurance.
There are no provisions in your policy for a procedure of this magnitude.
All right, you want money? I'll get you the money.
We've recently switched carriers.
We only give assistance to patients without coverage.
I'm sorry, I can't help you.
Have you tried Medicaid?
No, you don't qualify.
My son is dying. I'm broke. If I don't qualify, who the hell does?
I've done everything I can do. I'm sorry.
Please.
They are releasing him. Now you need to do something.
I'll take care of him.
Hear me? Do something.
The hospital's under new management now. Everybody does exactly what I say, nobody will get hurt.
More hurt.
I want my kid's name on the donor's list.
This is going to end up bad for you, John.
Police will do whatever is necessary to preserve the lives of these hostages.
Oh, they're telling me I got to take my son home and watch him die.
If you could speak to John Q right now, what would you say to him?
I'm there with you and you take care.
5:15,
Frank.
Something happens for me.
Are you praying for a baby?
Yes, I'm praying, sweetheart.
He's a good kid.
You'd like him.
I am not gonna bury my son.
I got a shot at this guy, and I'm gonna take it.
My son is gonna bury me.
Take the shot.
How's it gonna end, John?
John Q. You're listening to Democracy Now! That's a hard one to see. I didn't even remember what it was myself before we played this. We're talking about another case. It's the case of Tom Concannon, and he's a leading lawyer in New York. He's head of the Federal Defenders of the Eastern District for the Legal Aid Society. He is now defending his own life. He was diagnosed with multiple myeloma 2 years ago, and his doctors at New England Medical Center, Dr. Kenneth Miller, who we spoke to earlier, felt it was best for him to go through a bone marrow transplant. He would get the bone marrow from his sister. And last week he went up. His sister was getting ready to go up and went through the various procedures. He had the tubes put in him. And then Cigna, one of the nation's largest insurers, denied this procedure. To the surprise of his doctors, they said they've had 80 of these procedures insured, never once been denied. And now in Tom Concannon's case, they have denied it. Tom Concannon is in the studio with us, as is his wife, Jan Mardfin. I'm sorry you had to see that, Jan.
We don't go to the theater for just that reason.
We're also joined by Elizabeth Benjamin, who is a colleague at Legal Aid Society of Tom Concannon. She is supervising attorney in the Health Law Unit and has filed his appeals to try to get beyond Cigna to get this procedure for Tom Concannon. His doctor says he really has very little chance of surviving. If he doesn't get it, he has a 60% chance if he does. Jan Mardfin, how has this been for you, as Tom described dealing with these tubes in his chest now that were put there, well, at least at this point, for no reason? I'm sure you are a part of taking care of him.
Yeah, I do the cleaning process every morning and do the hair washing process and whatever else. And, of course, through all of this, we wonder, because he stopped taking the treatment that he was on before to keep his myeloma at bay, we wonder, you know, how much is the cancer progressing, so that the delay in all of this stuff, which should have happened last Friday, you know, how bad is it going to be so that this procedure, when it happens, if it happens, hopefully it will happen, how effective it will be at that point.
You work at J.P. Morgan?
Chase, yes.
How are you doing everything now?
A lot of juggling, I would say. Mm-hmm. You know, I just, you know, I realize there's I have no control over this whole thing. So I kind of sit back and, you know, try to keep occupied with what I can do.
When you were up at New England Medical Center last week, mm-hmm. you were prepared for him to go through this bone marrow transplant.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened? In the middle of it, as they said,
well,
no?
Tuesday, they put the tubes in. And Wednesday, we were out having lunch. It was going to be our day of rest. We went out to the Fenway Park that night. This was going to be our fun time before, you know, the angst and all the awful things were going to happen. And we got a call when we were out to eat to say that, in fact, the insurance company had denied it and we should go back to New York. Well, you know, we'd rented a car, taken all of our stuff up there in anticipation of being there for about 6 weeks. So we suddenly were in this turmoil. And figured that we would, you know, wait a day before coming back. We had to see the doctor on Thursday. You know, they had to organize the visiting medical, whatever, to teach me how to do this cleaning of the lumen. They have to change the bandage once a week. You know, kind of learning this whole new process.
Yeah, and actually trying to move back from Boston. I mean, essentially, Jan moved her office up there to try to make. To earn a living while staying up there, but there was so much stuff to carry that on the way back down and dragging all the bags and computers and stuff downstairs to put in the rental car, you know, I no doubt did something to the place where the incision is in my chest. So when we got back, we found that had been bleeding around the incision and it continued to do so for a couple of days. And that in itself might have ruined the tubes and required the whole process to be done again, the surgery perhaps on another side. So it was put in specifically for the purposes that we described and was to be removed when we finished at New England Medical Center. So we still got the tubes and nothing has gone in or out of them other than has been necessary to clean them, some sort of saline solution to keep them flushed, as they say, and some sort of anticoagulant. So they still have some utility, we hope, if and when this happens.
Tom Kincannon, you're used to defending other people. How does it feel to have to be fighting for your own life right now?
It's kind of a very curious thing. I don't have any prior experiences to relate it to because it's kind of, I guess some people call it an out-of-body experience. I'm kind of watching myself through this process. And frankly, for the most part, I'm feeling gratitude that I'm going through it myself and not taking my kids or my wife there. You know, I can't say any more about that. That'd be tougher.
Elizabeth, you work at the Legal Aid Society and you deal with cases like Tom's, and now you're working for the appeal. How likely do you see this operation taking place?
Well, the good news is, you know, it's very unlikely when you do the appeal and the plan that the plan's going to change its mind, right? It's money for them, and it's all about money. They've made some kind of actuarial calculation and decided that they're not going to pay. Cigna is not going to pay for Tom's, you know, care anymore. They've had it. So
how long have you been paying for your health insurance?
Well,
30 years.
I've been a legal aid lawyer for about 31 or 32 years.
And we're we are a big group for Cigna. I mean, I think they're making a huge mistake. Personally, I don't speak for all of Legal Aid Society, but I know I'm going to be writing our personnel department saying time to leave Cigna. This is outrageous. But that's my personal choice. His chances. Going back to what his chances are. I mean, you don't have great chances when you're appealing within the plan. But
when you're appealing, like within Cigna.
Yeah, when you're making your appeals within the insurance company. But once you get to the external review agent, this, you know, private company that's on contract to the State Department of Insurance, you have now suddenly a 50-50 chance of winning. So, you know, the odds still aren't perfect for Tom, but they're increasing exponentially each time we get outside. If we lose at IPRO, our only recourse is to go to court. So that's where we're at. And
you would go to court to try to force the insurance company. But
every
step
day.
You take is another day.
Yeah.
Cigna's motto is a business built on caring. Have you thought of going personally to Cigna?
You have.
Well, we've really tried that. Had friends, anybody we could contact them. But
yeah.
What are your plans now? Are you actually working?
Yeah, I'm going to go to the office after when we leave here, and Jan will go to work, and then tomorrow we hope to have a resolution. If the answer is no, then I guess I try to find out whether or not I go back to Boston to have the tubes removed, or whether or not that can be done down here locally, and then go back and resume the other medications that I was on to see if I can catch up on that, or they'd alter the protocol for the other medications I was taking, and consider suing them. I'd have to. I haven't asked Elizabeth much about that yet because I've been kind of avoiding the pain of kind of hoping we're not going to get to that point.
How do you sue when you're so sick?
Well, I'd without Elizabeth, I wouldn't be where to begin. To tell you the truth, I mean, there are times, particularly if I'm on medications, many are very debilitating and they affect memory, and they all have neuropathy effects, nerve ending deadenings. I can't drive anymore. I'm often too dizzy for that, and the disease causes the vertical collapse, compression of bones, and you get sick enough. I've been sick enough so that I've actually coughed three ribs loose from my sternum, separated them, broken them. So I don't know how one begins. I don't know what one does without less in terms of resources than I have. I have a very caring, loving family, and my enchantress here is very determined and hardworking. And so,
how many kids do you have?
Two, but it always looks like more because I have three sisters with 15, and they they live with us. When one gets in trouble here or there, there's always another one or two around.
I did ask your doctor a question, Dr. Kenneth Miller. I asked him about why they didn't just go through the operation anyway, even when Cigna said no. Let's see if we can take a listen to that. Well,
procedure,
yeah, here he goes. This procedure, why not do it even without the insurance?
Oh, that gets very complicated. This is a very expensive procedure, unfortunately.
How much is it?
Generally a procedure like this is $150,000 to $200,000. And that is beyond the means for most people. And unfortunately, medicine is expensive, and the hospitals don't provide free service yet.
That was Dr. Kenneth Miller. He's doctor of medicine, Tufts New England Medical Center. He's head of the bone transplant unit. What can people do, Elizabeth Benjamin, in a case like this?
Well, if you want to help Tom, I think a good thing to do would be to call Cigna's vice president and corporate spokesman and express your utter dismay at their conduct in this case. His name is Wendell Potter, P-O-T-T-E-R. His telephone number is 215-761-4450. If you prefer email and don't want to spend the money on calling Connecticut, you can email their vice president, who is the medical director who denied Tom's coverage. Her name is Janet Maurer, and her email is janet.maurer@cigna.com. Her phone number, if you're feeling lucky, is 860-226-7560. You can also call the current judge right now and say, please do the right thing, Island Peer Review Organization, and please save Tom's life. And hit their number.
This is IPRO,
the independent
ones you've appealed to now that will make their decision on Thursday morning whether or not you can go ahead with this procedure, with this transplant.
And they're contracted by the state of New York and other states to do these kind of reviews, and they may be interested in hearing from the public and how we feel about public agencies that are publicly contracted, and encourage them to do the right thing for Tom. And their number is 516-326-7767. Explain you're calling about Tom Concannon's external review case and that you're very interested in it and you want them to do the right thing, and you know they will.
What is that phone number again?
516-326-7767. 516-326-7767.
Tom Concannon, any last words for our listeners?
Well, I'm grateful for being here and for seeing you, and actually much more than I ever have been in my life. I'm grateful for every day, for waking up and seeing life and my daughter's smile. My son's a little bit more reluctant to smile, but
he's also away at college. He had the smile on the phone last night.
He's away at a dormitory at college. We're not sure he's seen the inside.
Well, we'll certainly continue to follow what happens with your case, Tom. Thomas Concannon is a head of the Federal Defenders of the Eastern District of New York at the Legal Aid Society. He's been there for more than 30 years fighting for other people's lives. His wife also with us, Jan Mardfin, and Elizabeth Benjamin, supervising attorney in the Health Law Unit of the Legal Aid Society, working on Tom Concannon's case now, his colleague and I guess now his lawyer as well. You are listening to Democracy Now!, and also you can go to our website for any further information, and we hope Cigna will respond. Our website is www.democracynow.org. That's www.democracynow.org, and it'll have all information that Elizabeth just gave out. You're listening to Democracy Now! When we come back from one death sentence to another, we're going to look at the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal. Today is his 48th birthday. Stay with us.
I hear that mob howling, they're headed for the square. Saying, catch those freedom fighters, but we're gonna meet them there. Get on board, children, children, get on board. Children, get on board, children, children. Let's fight for human rights. Get on board, children, children, get on board. Now, children, get on board, children, children. Let's fight for human rights. As fighters, we go hungry, sometimes no eat or sleep. But when you fight for freedom, the end you'll be free. So get on board, children, children, get on board. Now, children, get on board, children, children. Let's fight for human rights. Get on board, children, children, get on board. Children, get on board, children, children. Let's fight for human rights.
As fighters, we're aware of the fact that we may go to jail. But when you fight for freedom,
the Lord will go your bail. Get on board, children, children, get on board. Now, children, get on board, children, children. Let's fight for human rights. Get on board, children, children, get on board. Children, get on board.
Get on board. Kim and Reggie Harris, Rock of Ages, here on Democracy Now! Resistance Radio. I'm Amy Goodman. From one death row to another, today is the birthday of Mumia Abu-Jamal. He is 48 years old. He has spent 21 years of his life on death row. On December 9th, 1981, Mumia Abu-Jamal was driving a taxi cab in Philadelphia. He saw a police officer beating his brother, William Cook, on a street corner. What happened next is unclear. Both he and Officer Daniel Faulkner were shot. Daniel Faulkner died. Abu-Jamal was sentenced to death for the murder of Daniel Faulkner in 1982. He's been on death row ever since. Human rights groups, people around the world have said his trial was a sham. The judge in the case, known as the hanging judge of Philadelphia, Albert Sabo, led a trial that was clear what his intent was, and that was to sentence Mumia Abu-Jamal to death, whatever the facts. We're going to start right now with Julia Wright. She is in France, and people from around the world are sending in their birthday wishes to Mumia Abu-Jamal on death row. Now, the latest in his legal case, the federal judge, Judge Yan, has overturned the death sentence of Mumia Abu-Jamal and said that the district attorney has 180 days to go through a resentencing of Mumia Abu-Jamal. But the district attorney of Philadelphia has appealed that ruling, and so Mumia Abu-Jamal remains on death row at SCI Green, which is the prison where he's being held in Pennsylvania. We reached Julia Wright, one of his staunchest supporters, just before the program. She is a writer and activist in Paris, France. She is the daughter of Richard Wright, who wrote, among other books, Native Son. And Julia Wright had just come in from major protests against Jean-Marie Le Pen, the far-right candidate for president in France, and I asked her about Mumia Abu-Jamal's case.
I'm one of these people who say that they are really afraid of what we unearthed. I'll give you some examples. First of all, I think the key fact here is that one man has come forward to confess that he is the one who killed Daniel Faulkner. And he gives such information, such a series of facts that have been unknown until now, that he could not have known had he not been there that night.
This is Arnold Beverly.
He has sent what you call, you know, when you got an earthquake, shockwaves through the political and legal system in the state of Pennsylvania, because what he's saying is the truth, and the truth has the capacity to shake that government, to turn it upside down, because he can name names. So what do we have? We have Judge Yan backing, how do you say, backing up, backing out, backing, taking a step backwards, and suspending Mumia's death sentence. Because underlying this judgment, 18th of December 2001, is an unspoken deal. And the deal is, speaking to us, speaking to the defense, don't insist on bringing Arnold Beverly to the stand. Stop all this fuss with Arnold Beverly, and we will offer, in exchange, to Mumia, life in prison on a silver platter. And our reaction to this deal, to this dirty deal, and Mumia's reaction, much more important than ours, is no. He will not accept life in prison based on a lie. He is innocent. So our work, and it's been long, long, long work, has achieved that step backwards. Another key factor, and this is historic, and oh boy, am I proud, because it's happened here. The city of Paris, the city of light, the main capital of Europe, has offered Mumia honorary citizenship. That was on the 5th of December, 2001. And that had not happened since Pablo Picasso was given the same honor. And actually, Mumia is the second black American to have received that honor since my father, in 1948, Richard Wright, was named Friend of the City of Paris. And you know what? This is, you know, the American media did not know how to handle this. This was a hot potato.
Julia Wright, speaking to us from Paris, France, about Mumia Abu-Jamal. Mumia Abu-Jamal is a well-known reporter, African-American reporter, former head of the Pennsylvania chapter of the Association of Black Journalists, the National Association of Black Journalists. In 1980, he was an NPR reporter, and this was his report on Jimmy Carter.
Good evening. From National Public Radio in Washington, I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Bob Edwards with All Things Considered. Both President Carter and Ronald Reagan will campaign in Virginia today. Mumia Abu-Jamal reports on the president's stumping in Pennsylvania yesterday.
Lansdowne is a largely Republican district located above the southwest section of Philadelphia in Delaware County. It is here that Carter came yesterday to the suburban Essex Street home of Mr. and Mrs. Joseph and Bertha Phillips.
We've had good luck already with a so-called multilateral trade negotiation settlement on textiles.
Of his major opponent, Republican candidate Ronald Reagan, Carter strongly criticized his stand on SALT II talks and the nuclear arms escalation.
And now for a potential president to advocate a nuclear arms race is a shocking thing to many people and of concern to me, just the atmosphere in our own country.
Carter left the open-air event to attend a $1,000 plate dinner with party bigwigs in Center City, Philadelphia's Fairmount Hotel. For National Public Radio, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal in Philadelphia.
On National Public Radio.
And you are listening to Democracy Now! Let's go to another clip of an interview that Mumia Abu-Jamal did with Bob Marley.
No reggae artist in the world has attracted the loving accolades of the dreadlocked Marley. Marley is truly a missionary, and his message, one of global black redemption, is contained within the music of Rastafari.
Well, there's an exodus from Babylon. We as a Babylon, and then a physical exodus to womb. So what we really say is that we want the black people to unite with one another. Then and deal with it. Capitalism and communism are finished. The Rasta now, the black man, we have life. That's what we are saying, Jed. We are saying, give the black man theme we are life now. Make him show your whole government run and how people care for people. We think of the love. Who sing the tune them in the church? The black people are singing them, you know. Who is the spiritual people upon earth? The black people. Them are dealing with God, and God not let them down. God did it, and God said them to unite, because when you unite, that is the power of God.
The music is militant, its beat moving, its message just is moving.
That was Mumia Abu-Jamal, an excerpt of an interview he did with Bob Marley, and those clips came from Noel Hanrahan of the Prison Radio Project. Some rare interviews that have just been released on the CD 175 Progress Drive. On the line with us is Tom Morello. He's guitarist for the band Rage Against the Machine. Your thoughts today on Mumia Abu-Jamal's 48th birthday?
Well, I'd like to send my greetings along to Mumia for his birth and birthday wishes as well. I had the opportunity to meet Mumia Abu-Jamal about a year and a half ago. And it was a really striking and moving experience. And the thing that was most surprising about meeting Mumia in person was just how vital, alive, intelligent, humorous, and free Mumia Abu-Jamal seems after having spent 23 hours a day for over 21 years in a cell smaller than the average bathroom. We spoke for a couple of hours about matters great and small, and I was really impressed with the man. Equally impressive was the night before, about 10 p.m. the night before, as I was staying in the Pennsylvania hotel room, I summoned up on the internet. You know, I wrote to the fans of Rage Against the Machine if anyone had any messages to pass along to him. I'd be happy to try to bring them to him. And in that, you know, the few hours from 10 p.m. till when I left in the morning about 6 a.m., there were hundreds, if maybe thousands of messages came in from the four corners of the world, from Serbia, Ireland, Canada, Australia, England, Germany, and even the what sometimes seems like a foreign country, Mumia's own Philadelphia. Messages of support and solidarity came flooding in. Now, sadly, at the on death row, you can't bring anything into the prisoners, and they're completely walled off from you during the entire interview. But I managed to smuggle in a little note, which I was able to read to Mumia through the thick glass. So that was encouraging.
Tom Morello, I want to thank you for being with us. Guitarist for Rage Against the Machine, won the Grammy in 1997, awarded Best Metal Performance for the Tire Me track of its Evil Empire album. Has a new significance now. As we end with a commentary, the latest commentary of Mumia Abu-Jamal, he can't be recorded in person right now in prison. The prison authorities have changed the rules, but he can be recorded on the phone. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
As Israeli tanks rumble through Palestinian lands and tens of thousands of Israeli troops trash hundreds of Palestinian homes, the President of the United States speaks at a rare live press conference of the U.S. allies' military assault. "I think it's unhelpful," he says. In one of the Palestinian people's darkest hours, when Ramallah and its refugee camps are being ravaged by over 20,000 Israeli troops, hundreds of tanks, and the relentless repression of F-16 air power, the response of the American government is insipid, uninspired, and reflective of the overwhelming bias that marks the U.S. stance in regards to the Middle East conflict. While U.S. diplomats and politicians repeatedly call for peace, the U.S. can hardly be called a fair arbiter. Consider, for example, the role of the U.S. in the halls of the United Nations whenever Palestinian issues were put forward. For example, Resolution 33110 on living conditions of the Palestinian people, date December 18, 1978. The vote was 110-2, U.S. and Israel voting against. Or Resolution 34113, a request for a report on the living conditions of the Palestinians in occupied Arab nations. That was December 14th, 1979. Vote 120-2. Guess who voted against? Or Resolution 34133, the Assistance to Palestinian People Resolution of December 14th, 1979. The vote 112-3, U.S., Israel, and Canada. Resolution 35169C, the Rights of Palestinians of 12-15-1980. The vote 120-3, the U.S., Israel, and Australia voting against. The writer could have extended the list, but the point is made. Is there any wonder that either Palestinians in particular or Arabs in general feel that the U.S. is ill-suited to arbitrate between the two sides? Whenever a Palestinian harms an Israeli, the U.S. is quick to castigate Arafat for not doing enough for peace. When Israeli soldiers or settlers engage in anti-Arab violence, there is either deafening silence from the U.S. or the same type of tepid, lukewarm, unhelpful comments that President Bush made in response to the recent massive military incursions in Ramallah and refugee camps. The UN Security Council recently voted, with U.S. support, for a resolution approving the establishment of a Palestinian state. Has the U.S. suddenly, like Saul on the road to Damascus, seen the light? Hardly. In this new age of global war, even the U.S. empire had to act in a certain way to placate Arab allies like Egypt and Saudi Arabia. The question is, what kind of state? An independent, sovereign territory, or a proxy for U.S. and Israeli interests? A nation is far more than a flag, a capital, and an airport, especially in this age of imperial globalist hunger and unbridled power. Unless events drastically change, a Palestinian state will be what Israel and the U.S. allows, and no more. From Death Row, for Free Speech Radio, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
And today again, Mumia Abu-Jamal's 48th birthday. He has been on death row for 21 years. You are listening to Democracy Now!, which is produced by Chris Abrams, Miranda Kennedy, Lizzie Ratner. Anthony Salone is our music maestro and engineer. And again, the phone number of Cigna Corporate Communications, 215-761-4450. You can go to our website for all contact information at www.democracynow.org or email us at mail@democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening. Set up like the deck of cards. They're sending us to only grace from all the diamonds. They'll use a pair of clubs to beat the spades. With poetry, I paint the pictures that hit. More like the murals that fit. Don't turn away. Get in front of it. Brother, did you forget your name? Did you?
you're losing on the wall playing tic-tac-toe. Yo, check the diagonal. Three brothers gone, come on. Doesn't that make it three in a row?
Anger is a gift. Come on!